Welcome to the Dildorks, dorky discourse on sex, dating, and masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex blogger, a sex journalist, and I think my favorite sex negative myth is the one about vaginas stretching out when you put too much stuff in them, because I just kind of like the image of my vag muscles as just this Play-Doh-esque, like, gloopy, gumby material that just stretches apart and just stays that way. It's just, it's body horror. It's grotesque.
Could you just imagine walking around with your vag just that open all the time?
Yeah.
Like, just, like, the dicks I fuck, just like a 2-inch hole.
It would be like walking around with your mouth all the way open all the time. Like, you could do it. Some interesting stuff would happen, though, for sure.
Just like a casual tunnel into my body at all times.
God, it's awful. I wonder if anyone lives like that, and I just wonder what precautions they take, honestly. Like, because you gotta get debris in there. Like, I really wonder, like, what the solutions are to that problem, if indeed that is a problem.
I mean, underwear, probably.
But, I mean, yeah.
Maybe, like, slightly more industrial underwear. There's a draft, yeah. I'm sure.
I'm imagining something that's like a dust plug for an iPhone headphones jack, but it's like, you know, for when underwear just isn't enough.
Do you like how we started the podcast because the bloops were off the rails and now we're here?
What is a bloop? Philosophy. Anyway, we're talking about
sex. A peek
negative.
Behind the curtain there. Sometimes we talk about bloops before the show because we have stories for each other.
Loving this breaking the fourth wall content.
Yeah.
I guess we break the fourth wall every week, actually. That doesn't really make sense. Anyway, we're talking about sex negative myths this week. There are so many of them.
Hey,
I think this might be... Yeah?
I didn't say who I am.
Oh, well, just go for it, then.
I'm Bex. Carry on.
Well, what? I'm supposed to fucking keep you on track over here? Take responsibility for yourself. Anyway, can we start by busting the vag stretches out and gets loose myth? We did talk about it kind of recently when we were talking about large penetration, but... In particular, it seems to come up a lot when people are talking about sluts, and I have a whole subcategory of being a slut is bad related negative beliefs. And one of them is that if you have a lot of sex with a lot of different dudes, your vag will stretch out, which begs the question, like, what about if you have a lot of sex with one dude? Why doesn't your vag stretch out in that case?
It just molds to that person's dick like memory foam. It just really learns the contours.
Mm. And then you try to fuck someone else and you're ruined. Might as well not even try.
It's like, you ever wear someone else's leather boots? You know, it's like that.
I actually haven't, and that says a lot about you as a person, but sure.
Like, well, once they're, like, super broken in, like, yeah. You don't put someone else's... Like, especially, like, those Renfair leather boots.
Love having a vag that's broken in. That's a point of pride. Yeah, so your vag does not stretch out from multiple dicks or from one dick. I actually just had to school my mom on this the other day because she's a woman in her 60s and she doesn't know this because it's such a commonly held belief and, like, one that's commonly repeated in the media. And, like, your vag is made of muscles, so I always tell people, like, if you think about somebody who does a lot of yoga, their muscles don't stay stretched out all the time the way they do in, like, maximum stretch position, because if they did, you'd just be fucking Gumby, like, you wouldn't
I'm picturing them walking around like Octodad.
Well, I always picture it as, like, that dude in... The remake of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory after he gets all stretched out, Mike TV, and he's just like this, like, strange looking cartoon dude. But yeah, vaginas don't do that. So, no.
That's not how that works.
That is just fully a slut shaming rhetoric that doesn't make any goddamn sense. And I would like to say, from personal experience, like, I am kind of a slut by some people's standards. Like, I have my lifetime list of sexual partners currently is at 30, in case anybody at home is keeping count. And
my someone just ran like, and updated their, like, whiteboard.
Keeping some strange notes about me. All right, cool. But I routinely still, to this day, get the comment from sexual partners that I am very tight or that I'm unusually tight or whatever, which just, like, for me personally proves that that is just a bullshit belief, because I've really slutted it the fuck up and still tight in there. But that brings me to another thing, which is, like, being tight isn't, like, the be-all and end-all of, like, vaginal perfection, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so the way bodies generally work is part of the arousal cycle, at least part of the physical process, which is not always necessarily related to what's going on in someone's head. But part of the physical process is the vagina tensing or opening up to be able to receive penetration. Mm-hmm. So, like, tightness is generally a sign that someone isn't super warmed up.
Yeah.
And generally isn't super comfortable for the receiver. This is speaking as someone who really enjoys the feeling of, like, being stretched and whatever. Mm-hmm. But for a lot of people, that feeling is uncomfortable or painful. So that's not to say that it's bad for someone to be tight, but, like, it's a sign that you generally want to, like, work with them a little bit. And, like, looseness is looseness. I don't know, being able to accommodate the things you put in it, like, is generally a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, this is why it's hilarious when dudes are trying to, like, brag about their sexual bravado and they talk about their ladies being so tight, and it's like, that probably just means that you're not turning her on very much, but okay.
But sure.
Yeah.
Also, how is that even a measure of their prowess? Like, I am so good, her body is like this.
Yeah, yeah. And then also, like, tightness is sometimes related to actual medical issues and sometimes can pose, like, a serious problem, like vaginismus and conditions like that, where, like, it can actually get in the way of your sexual functioning, which are their own problems and, like, have their own treatments and stuff. But point being, tightness is not always a positive thing, and we shouldn't revere it in this, like, super weird virgin-praising way that we do as a culture.
Yeah. Ugh.
Another being a slut is bad category of myth. Having a sex. Once you have a sex.
It's once you have one. Once you have a sex, you can't go back.
Okay,
which so probably just can't stop.
Let's actually, can we talk about virginity for a second? Because
yes.
It's like a whole other subcategory.
Once you pop, you just can't stop.
Right, right. Okay, the cherry popping. What's up with the cherry popping? Tell me about that.
The idea that the hymen is like a freshness seal for vaginas. And
if this seal is broken, please return the product to your nearest outlet.
Yeah, like, you can just, like, stare at a vagina and know.
Mm-hmm.
And that you, like, pop it like a balloon the first time you have sex. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of get the image of, like, this freshness seal that you, like, open the bottle and just, like, stab the middle and then you can start, like,
fucking it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, the same the way I take a knife to open my peanut butter, like, that's what they think.
Yikes.
Dicks are supposed to do. I don't know. This whole episode is off the rails. We're busting sex myths and we have opinions about them.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine. Yeah. When in reality, so the hymen covers a part of the vaginal opening,
mm-hmm.
And it's a flexible bit of tissue that can be broken while having sex the first time or another time,
mm-hmm.
or can be broken through, you know, masturbation, or
horse
riding a horse,
using tampons.
Or gymnastics, tampons, yeah,
mm-hmm.
Or just life.
They're pretty fragile.
Yeah, it's just, like, this, like, little membrane of tissue that is around, like, I guess the bottom half of the vaginal opening.
I don't even know, honestly.
I mean, depending on what angle you're looking at it, I guess.
Yeah. My understanding of the hymen is that it doesn't always break. Often it just stretches or sort of spreads apart. And I know some people who experienced a lot of pain and even some blood their first time having sex, and some people who didn't. And I'm in the former category. There was a little bit of pain, a little bit of blood. But, yeah, it doesn't say anything about your status as someone who has or has not had sex because of all the aforementioned reasons. There are a lot of reasons you might still have it after having sex. There are a lot of reasons you might not have it before having sex.
Yeah.
And, like, the whole bullshit concept of virginity in general is just shocking that it's still so much of a thing.
Yeah, like, it sounds like such a simple concept, right? Mm-hmm. Like, all right, we have a word for people who haven't done this thing yet. Which, like, is weird. We don't have a word for people who haven't done most other things. Like, it's not like, oh, you've never been on a roller coaster. Like, that right. doesn't get a name, but sure, whatever.
And when they do try to give it a name, they co-opt the word virgin. Like, when you go to Rocky right. Horror, people who've never been are called virgins and stuff, which always strikes me as, like, kind of a creepy thing, especially since it's used in so many non-sexual contexts to call someone a virgin in this, like, very sexualizing way that's, like, not even necessary.
Right, and the word has all these connotations about, like, purity that are mm-hmm. weird.
Yeah.
And all of this, like, moral baggage on it. But, like, aside from all of that, it really falls apart when you try and define sex.
Yes.
Right? Like, is it someone who has never had PIV? Okay. Mm-hmm. What if they're never going to? Like, what if they're a person with a vulva who's only ever going to have sex with other vulvas? Like, mm-hmm. where's the line there? Queer people really fucking up all straight people's narratives. We're just here to be like, it doesn't make sense.
But, like, even within the realm of, like, male on female cisgender folks having sex, like, I have definitely noticed the PIV doesn't seem to be as centralized in the sexual narratives of many millennials. And certainly it is not the dominating thing in my sex life, but there is some sense of, like, it being the thing that defines your virginity or not, to the point that, like, I grew up a total sex nerd. I totally understood all these shades of gray of, like, queerness and transness and so, well, like, not totally, but I mean, more than a person of my age generally would at that time. And I still kind of didn't feel like I'd lost my virginity when I was having a bunch of, like, lesbian oral sex at age 16. Like, when I lost it to a man at age 19, I kind of was like, well, that felt more like a virginity loss, and it's because of all this, like, ridiculous pressure that we build up around these titles.
Yeah. And then you run into this weird stuff around people, like, specifically having anal sex to still be virgins.
Yeah.
Which, like, sure, fine, whatever, call it what you want. I don't care.
A loophole or a different kind of hole.
Yeah, like, I don't care. Call it whatever you want. I'm not here. Like, language is a weird thing. Use the words that work for you, whatever. Mm-hmm. But the people that are doing that are generally people who don't have access to a ton of sex education and are engaging in a higher risk behavior. Mm-hmm. Because you've told them that this other moderate risk behavior is bad.
Yeah.
With zero education.
Yeah, anal sex is, like, super dangerous if you don't know what you're doing on, like, multiple levels. It's really fucked up that people are turning to it because of lack of education in other areas.
And, I mean, I also think it's really dangerous because of the way, like, the narratives we have around it, right? The mm-hmm. here's another myth that it will always hurt.
Mm.
Not the case. But then it's the kind of thing that people are like, well, I have to do this thing, whether they want to or not, because it's the only sex I have access to.
Yeah.
Right? Because this virginity. And I've heard it's going to hurt, so when it does, I guess I should just keep doing that.
Mm-hmm.
When human nature generally is to stop doing the thing that hurts. And I recognize that I'm the person saying this. Just why I prefaced it with generally.
Mm-hmm.
But we have all of these bullshit narratives that no one goes, oh, that hurts, and this is supposed to feel good. Maybe I should do this different.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone is just like, well, maybe eventually it'll feel good.
Yeah. Yeah, not only for anal, but also for PIV, like,
yeah.
If you're the receptive partner for PIV, like, the narrative is very much, it's gonna hurt, and you just kind of have to muscle through it, which, like, yeah, it might hurt. I know a lot of people for whom it hurt, but, like, if you're doing proper foreplay, using body-safe lube, you're really into it, you're really into the person you're doing it with, and that's gonna reduce the chances of there being pain, and I really don't think we should, like, pride ourselves on, like, the pain that happens during this moment, because it's, like, not pivotal to the moment, and also, like, probably not ideal.
Yeah. I honestly went into it, I think I've told this story before, but, like, I went into it expecting pain, and because I'm the person that I was, and am...
Mm-hmm.
Like, it didn't hurt for me, because, as we've learned, my junk can do some things. my bits were just like, this, nah, we've got a future. Don't you worry, man, we got you. We are going places.
This is the start of a beautiful friendship.
But it didn't hurt, and I kind of had this moment where I was like, no, like, this is supposed to be, like, something's supposed to change, something's supposed to happen. Mm-hmm. I was supposed to feel this pain and endure this thing so that now I can be a sexual human being. Mm-hmm. Regardless of the fact that I was sucking a ton of dick before that. But, like, I was going to endure this pain.
Mm-hmm.
And... become this fully actualized sexual human being, or whatever the fuck that was. No one gave me a crown. I didn't get a trophy when I was done. Like, nothing changed.
I feel that, like, the pressure on this first sexual experience, like, amps up the pressure so high that it leads to a lot of disappointment and hurt feelings. And it's like, most of us understand intuitively that most things in relationships take time for you to, like, get to know each other and do a good job at it. Like, if someone bought me a gift for my birthday and we had only been dating for a month, like, I would, of course, understand and forgive them if it, like, wasn't the most perfect gift for me, because, like, they're still getting to know me. Whereas, like, when you first have sex with a person, if it's bad, like, I feel like sometimes our tendency is to be like, oh my god, this means that the relationship is doomed, or it means that I'm bad at sex, or it means that they're bad at sex, and it's like, in everything else, we accept that it takes time to get to know a partner and to get to know what you yourself like.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's just in line with, in every other skill, we expect it to be normal for you to want to learn and pursue it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But there's so much stigma and weirdness around... pursuing sex as a skill and sex as a hobby, which we've talked about. We still got to do an episode on that.
Sex as a hobby? Yeah.
Because, like, I just love it as a concept, and it really, like, sums up, I think, both of our approach to sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't talk about sex that way.
Yeah.
So that creates this narrative that you're good at it or you're bad at it. These are two states that you can be in, and when you start having sex, you will find out which one you are. And then you just live with that, I guess.
Yeah.
Doesn't give space for, like, compatibility.
Or growth, yeah. These narratives are so, so insidious. Like, I am someone who's been sexually active for a decade. I am a sex educator literally for a living, and a few months ago... a friend with benefits of mine who I had stopped seeing made, like, sort of an offhanded joke about how the sex we had was never that good, which was true, but I was, like, so weirdly hurt by this, and it was because, like, I had that narrative in my head of, like, you can be objectively bad at sex, which just isn't a real thing.
Yeah.
So to steer back to being a slut is bad types of narratives, a really common one is that having sex with someone, quote, too early or maybe, like, on a first date is bad. What do you think about that one, Bex?
I honestly, like, if I don't at least make out with someone on a first date, I'm probably not going on a second date. unless, like, something weird happens. 'Cause for me, that kind of, like, chemistry is important to keep me interested in someone, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? And, like, all right, if we don't make out, like, at least some sort of, like, sexual tension, something or other. But, yeah, for me, that's, like, if I'm dating someone, one of the key things we're probably going to enjoy doing together is having sex.
Mm-hmm.
So it's pretty helpful for me to learn that early on.
Yeah.
Learn if that's something we're compatible on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I personally have set sort of a loose rule for myself that I don't have sex on first dates. And this has been happening for the past, I don't know, year and a half or so. And it's not for the typical reasons that women are told not to do this, which is, like, if you have sex too early, he won't like you anymore or whatever. Like, I was noticing for myself personally, I would often like the person less if I had sex with them too early for me because, like, being maybe demisexual and, like, being more, like, romantically oriented, I feel a little bit shaken if I have sex with someone before I've developed enough intimacy to feel like that's okay. But, like, that is totally a personal choice. And when I was having sex on the first date, it was, like, totally fine. It wasn't my preference, but, yeah, certainly doesn't, you know, denote anything bad about the relationship.
Yeah, I think what is valuable, though, is, like, recognizing the impact it has on you, right?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the way we just expressed, we both lose interest after the first date based on how that goes, right?
Right.
And knowing that about ourselves is really helpful. Mm-hmm. Because I think that's another thing a lot of people run into, or that's an issue that a lot of people run into, is they go, oh, slut-shaming is bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone saying you can't have sex on the first date is slut-shaming, and that's wrong. So I go have sex on the first date because feminism.
Right. When actually, like, if you really want to be feminist about it, that would be about enabling choice and personal preference and exactly. taking your own path. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I only came to that realization after, like, therapy and journaling about it, and I was kind of, like, looking for patterns in, like, why I would feel terrible after some dates, and often it was because I had sex with someone who, like, I didn't even know them well enough to know really, like, what their deal was or what their vibe was, and so they would turn out to be something different from that, and it would really disappoint me. And so I found that if I held off on having sex for a date or two, that it would help me develop, like, a bigger, more whole picture of this person, and it resulted in less, like, horrible disappointment and sadness for me. So, yeah, it works pretty well for me.
Yeah.
A common one related to that is that people who have lots of sex or people who have sex pretty early have no self-respect, which I always think is a really weird, arbitrary thing to say about a person. Like, how do you know what their level of self-respect is? Like, you're looking at them from the outside. Like, you literally have no sense of how they feel about themselves.
I respect myself a hell of a lot after I get laid.
Yeah.
Excuse you. I'm walking out of that room high-fiving myself. Like, come on.
I think, you know, there are a lot of myths that come from a grain of truth. And I think the one here is, like, for me, certainly, there have been times in my life when I've been having sex out of a desire for, like, validation or affirmation that I'm actually attractive. Like, times when my self-image was, like, rock bottom. And that, like, never felt super healthy to me. But also, at the same time, like, it was a coping mechanism. And, like, lots of our coping mechanisms are imperfect, but they still are what help us get through difficult times. And so I'm really, like, careful about trash-talking people's coping mechanisms because I think they're often, like, really important. But for the most part, my sluttiness does not come from a lack of self-respect. It often comes from a very high self-regard and a very high knowledge of myself and what I need and want.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The people that are out there, like, seriously, like, negotiating their sluttiness, like,
mm-hmm.
no one knows themselves better than those people. Like, goddamn.
Yeah, and, like, to choose to be a slut in a world that actively wants to keep you from being a slut, like, you have to have your own priorities so deeply articulated to yourself to be able to stick with that mission, and that, to me, is, like, the definition of self-respect.
Yeah. And these people are, like, professional daters. Like, they have to have, like... I just think about the stuff I say every day. Like, the sales pitch for my job and stuff. Mm-hmm. I can do that, like, off the top of my head. These people must have their first date conversations down.
I know, it's badass.
Like, I admire that shit.
Can we talk about the sex before marriage thing, or sex after marriage, whatever? I don't hear so much about this anymore, but it's pretty hilarious to me that when I was younger, I quite unironically believed I was going to wait until marriage to have sex. And in retrospect, to think that that came from what I now recognize as probably demisexuality, which was, like, this desire to have someone, like, really care about me and be dedicated to me before I would feel comfortable having a bunch of sex with them. And I think I was very nervous that if I, like, gave it away, quote-unquote, too soon, that someone wouldn't respect me as much or wouldn't care as much about me. But, you know, we're kind of shifting away from marriage as the norm for millennials, so in a lot of ways this doesn't make a super lot of sense anymore. Not that it ever really did.
Yeah, but I don't think it's nearly as prevalent. Interestingly, honestly, I think the, like, social consciousness is moving towards more stigma towards the people who do choose to wait.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, because, like, on the one hand, a lot of these people are monogamous mm-hmm. and are going, I have never done this thing, but I will only ever do it with you, so hopefully it's great.
Yep.
But if not, who knows?
Yeah.
But that's like eating one ice cream flavor and being like, I guess this one's my favorite.
Like, this is often raised as, like, a moral question, like, especially by religious folks. And to me, it's not so much a moral question. Like, if someone chooses to wait or doesn't choose to wait, I don't have any particular moral beliefs about that either way. But I always kind of feel like, are you sure about that? Because, like, you might marry someone with whom the sex is terrible, like you're just alluding to. And, like, then you're going to be stuck in a relationship that, like, might not work and that you might feel like you have to stick it out in because you've committed to it. So, like, I'm fine with it if you choose it for personal reasons. Like, I'm very pro-personal choice, but I'm always kind of like, I don't know that that's the best way to achieve the goals that you have if one of your goals is, like, a healthy and satisfying relationship that has sex in it.
Yeah, like, you know, I don't hate the idea of, like, maybe you wait on PIV and you have that, you know, mm-hmm. and you do other stuff or whatever.
Yeah.
Sure, cute, whatever. I honestly look at that as, like, you know, oh, I have this TV series and I only watch this one with my partner. Like,
right.
Sure, you want to have a cute thing that you did on your wedding night that was fun and exciting and only for you. Sure.
Yeah.
great. Live your life. My concern is more when it's approached without, like, critical thought.
Mm-hmm.
And more from just this, like, moralistic place or this feeling of that they have to.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I fall into that same place of, like, you sure, though? I mean, okay.
Right, and, like, if I married someone who was, like, knew that I had a belief that I only wanted to have sex once I was married, I would always be nervous that that was why they had married me, like, that they had been a little bit pushed into that because they wanted to fuck me.
Mm.
And so it would be difficult for me to, I think, accept their love at face value, which just, like, complicates things further.
Yeah. Also, like, marriage is such a big thing.
Such an arbitrary line to draw as well. I mean, if you're religious, it makes sense because it's a big thing there. But, I mean, I almost think of, like, fluid bonding as being an equivalent thing for me in my life. Like, takes me a little bit to feel comfortable having someone cream pie me and also, like, timing and stuff. But, that's more something that I would want to keep for only a certain few.
Yeah. Also, like... Can we talk about how, like, the wedding night and wedding night sex has become, like, this,
oh my
like,
God.
Thing? To the point where, like, And with this idea of, like, sex after marriage or whatever, you're having a whole ass party inviting mm-hmm. all of your family and friends to be like, guess what? We finally get to fuck tonight.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I'm here for it, but it's just a weird tradition. You know what? I'm not here to judge straight culture, okay? They can do what they want in the comfort of their own bedroom. The gays have marriage
too now.
We do. We're better at it.
But, like, to your point, though, like, the pressure on wedding night sex is so high, and I know multiple married couples who have told me in confidence that they did not actually fuck on their wedding night because they were exhausted.
Yeah.
And, like, it wouldn't have been good sex. And also, like, you're married now, so you presumably have, like, a whole fucking lifetime to fuck some more. But, like, there is a sense of, like, failure sometimes if you don't fuck on your wedding night. Like, I even know a couple who didn't fuck at all on their honeymoon. And, you know, that doesn't necessarily have to bode badly for your relationship. Like, maybe you're just actually really fucking tired.
Yeah. Petition to make wedding morning sex a thing.
Oh my God. That has to be the best sex ever.
Right? Imagine waking up before you have to face your family, before you have to see anyone.
Mm-hmm.
You just wake up with your partner, have a couple orgasms, and then go deal with all of that shit. And then, like, you're walking down the aisle, and you're you know, you're at this stupid, like, fucking reception bullshit or whatever. I've been to, like, two weddings. I don't know. You're doing all smashing cake in each other's faces. I don't know. And thinking about their dick. It's just beautiful.
I love that one of the only things you know about weddings is that there's a splashing scene that happens sometimes.
Yes! Again, I'm not here to judge straight culture.
Okay, when you said wedding morning, I actually thought you meant the morning after the wedding,
which I
think would also be some amazing sex, because, like, you've pulled off this incredibly big thing that you've been planning forever, and now you can finally fucking relax with your partner. That must be bliss.
Yeah.
Goals. For me, not for you.
No. I will have wedding morning sex without the wedding.
Mm. So, morning sex.
We'll just plan something else fun and exciting.
Okay, like a spanking birthday party.
Yes! See? Perfect. Next birthday bruises, I need to find someone for aftercare sex.
I'm sure we can make that happen.
Yeah.
Okay, another myth to pivot a little bit. There's so many myths about masturbation being bad for you. And they range from, like, more emotional ones, like you should save yourself for the person that you want to have sex with or whatever, to more, like, ridiculous physical ones. Like, there have long been rumors that it causes hair on your palms or blindness or, like, a bunch of other really absurd things. Masturbation's not bad for you.
It's not bad for you. Oh my, if it could, like, create spontaneous hair growth, though, I would just start jerking off all of the parts of my body. Just, who needs tea anymore? I'll just jerk off on my shins. It's fine. Chest hair, we can make this work. I'm bendy.
My favorite story related to this is the thing about how both cornflakes and graham crackers were invented because there was at one time a belief that bland foods would drain your sex drive and make you not want to jerk off. And also, this is, a lot of people believe this is why circumcision became such a common practice, is out of, like, a desire to suppress masturbation. And indeed, like, taking away a bunch of someone's nerve endings might make them want to jerk off less, although I don't know that there is any data that shows that circumcised folks jerk off less than uncircumcised folks.
Well, like, and also, you circumcise folks so young that they still feel like that is what 100% sensation feels like for them.
Right.
It's not
they have,
like,
nothing to compare it to.
Yeah, it's not like something completely disappeared. So they're just, so, like,
right.
I can't imagine that reducing it at all.
Yeah.
It's not like some toddler is like, wow, jerking off yesterday felt so much better. You know what? I'm just going to give up on this forever now.
Like, also because, like, neurologically, your brain will often try to adjust for deficits in sensation. Like, I know some people with, like, spinal injuries can develop sensitive, like, sexually sensitive spots in the parts that they can feel. Or some folks who've had parts of their genitals removed can, like, develop sensation in other parts. So it's, like, not even an effective method if you know about how the brain works to compensate for these things.
They thought masturbation was bad. They didn't know how the brain works. They weren't talking to the kinksters.
Yeah. Whenever I think about this, I'm so grateful for how my mom raised me in this regard, because her thing was always, like, just do it in a private space. Like, just don't do it in front of people and you're fine. And she even, like, gave me a book that talked about masturbation. And I always remember that it described masturbation as a way of practicing your sexual response, which is exactly how I still think about it. Like, it is a perfectly valid solo act in and of itself. It is part of your solo sexuality if you want it to be. But also, like, it is such a great way of practicing your sexual response so that you are more in touch with what you want and what you like when you have sex with another person.
Yeah, it's such a low-pressure way to explore stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't actually remember anyone talking to me about masturbation.
Honestly. Did you learn about it on the internet?
No, I think my first girlfriend talked to me about it. Mm. And just, like, I just knew it was a thing. I don't remember finding out it was a thing. Mm-hmm. But, like, my first girlfriend was like, no, it's a thing you should do, though.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, wild.
Yeah.
All right, I guess. And it still took me, like, years before I started doing it regularly. And that wasn't until I, like, discovered sex toys.
Yeah, I'm, like, again, I'm very pro-personal choice. So if people tell me that they don't masturbate, like, especially if they, like, don't like it or just don't want to, like, I definitely respect that. But at the same time, like, I've seen that it can be a not great decision in some cases. Like, I had this friend in high school who never masturbated because she just, like, didn't find it pleasurable. She just wasn't that into it. She couldn't psychologically get into it, but she would enjoy having sex with other people. And I noticed that sometimes she would, like, seek out sexual experiences that she would later regret, or that people, like, with people who she didn't even like that much, because she was just, like, horny, basically. And I was always kind of, like, grateful that I was able to deal with that through masturbation. Although, like, I guess I can't totally judge what was going through her head, but it always seemed to me like if you're not jerking off, you might be likelier to make some impulsive decisions that you might not always be thrilled with.
Yeah, it didn't, like, I realized looking back a big part of why it didn't appeal to me and it wasn't something, like, I sought out myself was because so much of my sexuality is service oriented. Mm-hmm. So that was definitely something, and because, like, I have, like, more responsive desire and more into kink than sex, I guess, like, if I had to choose.
Yeah.
Which is a weird sentence to say, but it's, I guess, the best way I could talk about it. So, like, for me, it was very cerebral. Like, my exploration of my sexuality all happened in my head. Mm-hmm. So when someone was like, no, you can make your body do things, I was like, oh, shit, okay. But it was a whole learning curve.
Yeah.
Like, I was reading so much porn, just doing nothing about it. Mm-hmm.
And, like, for that matter, there's a common belief that masturbation is in some way, like, a poor man's sex, like, a poor substitute for sex with a partner. And I have actually found, like, masturbation to be a really interesting way of proving to myself in a larger way that, like, it's okay to be alone and, like, you don't need to constantly be fighting to be in a relationship. Because, like, when I've been single and I've been sad about it, often, like, one of my first recourses is to get really into my masturbation, and that might mean seeking out new erotica, new porn, trying new things, trying different lube, different toys, and just, like, really kind of getting to know my body again. And that's been such a beautiful way of showing myself, like, you don't have to constantly be dating someone, it's fine.
Yeah, I don't... jerking off and having sex are very different experiences for me. Mm-hmm. Like, they're both great, and, like, involve some of the same nerve endings.
Yeah.
But, like, completely different.
Yeah. I also think, like, particularly for people who are raised and socialized as women, like, there is so much, like, less discourse out there about, like, masturbation for vulvas, and I think that like, directly contributes to a lot of people with vulvas having difficulties in sex with partners. Like, there are so many folks with vulvas who, like, haven't even had an orgasm by the time they start having sex with partners or whatever, because, like, mm-hmm. they haven't been encouraged to get to know their own bodies, and, like, it's not painted as, like, so much a natural thing as it is for folks with penises, and so, like, it's actively harmful and actively contributes to the orgasm gap when we don't encourage masturbation and we treat it as something that's, like, weird or only open to certain people or only for desperate people or whatever.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't that long ago we were fucking firing Dr. Elders for mentioning mm-hmm. it. Yeah. Like, we talk about the cornflakes thing, like, you know, this wild, wacky history.
Yeah.
We fired the Surgeon General for suggesting that we tell kids it's okay to masturbate. Like, yeah. What?
Fucking yeah, ridiculous. I don't recall masturbation really being discussed in my sex ed classes at school, which, like, isn't surprising. But I live even in, like, a pretty liberal area of Canada where you might expect that they might touch on it, and I don't really remember that being touched on at all.
Touched on.
And then I had to learn about it from the internet, and, like, if you go on the internet looking for masturbation techniques and you're not already a sex nerd who's used to thinking critically about this stuff, like, there's a lot of very dangerous techniques that are suggested, like shoving stuff inside you that should not go inside you and that kind of thing, and this is all the more reason why we should teach it in schools, because you really don't want your child, like, electrocuting themselves or, you know, whatever they're gonna do.
Yeah.
One more masturbation-related myth is that you shouldn't need to or want to masturbate if you're in a relationship. Pretty weird.
Yeah. Once again, masturbation and sex, separate things.
Yeah.
And, like, your sexuality doesn't belong to your partner once you've started dating them. Like, they're not just entitled to all of your sexual energy all of the time, even if you're monogamous.
Yeah, unless you've specifically negotiated that, but probably most of the people talking this kind exactly. of shit wouldn't have done that.
Exactly. Like, you can totally negotiate that, and there are some really hot and really fun ways to play with that. Mm-hmm. But even then, like, that's still, like, that doesn't imply that you don't need to jerk off. It explicitly implies that you want to.
Yeah.
Like, it is exactly the opposite of this narrative.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a personal thing because, like, for example, I barely jerk off by myself anymore because I have phone sex with my partner almost every night, which is, like, essentially jerking off, but is also a shared partnered act. And, like, my sex drive is such that I don't really crave it that much outside of that. Like, I'll jerk off by myself maybe twice a month. But at the same time, like, it's not because I don't want to or don't need to have a sexuality outside of him. It's just, you know, that's where I'm at right now. And that's totally okay.
Also, like, the average person, I don't think, gets off multiple times a day anyway.
Yeah.
So, like, if your nightly sex with him gets mm-hmm. you off, like...
Yeah. Then I'm good.
So I think that makes perfect sense.
When I was 17, I was single, and I mentioned somewhere online having an orgasm, and someone messaged me anonymously and was like, "But you don't have a boyfriend. How are you having orgasms?" And I was like, "Oh, sweetheart. Oh my God. I have some things to teach you."
I have news.
But, like, likewise, I've also received messages while in relationships from people, like, confused that I continue to jerk off, even though, like, literally it's part of my job, but also, you know, it's fine to still continue masturbating. Like, it fulfills different needs for a lot of people.
Yeah, I mean, it's that same narrative, right? That masturbation only exists as a substitute for sex. Mm-hmm. Which is, like... I mean, that's not all that different from, like, hand jobs. You grow out of them in high school because they're just a substitute for real sex. Like, it's all the same idea of what real sex is or should be.
Yeah. Yeah, I think next week we should have a discussion about what is sex, because that is, like, really underlying a lot of these myths, is, like, misunderstandings about what can be identified as sex, or just, like, different definitions, which is fine. But, yeah, next week we're going to come back and talk about more sex-negative myths. There's so many.
So many.
Yeah. Thanks so much for joining us for this episode of the Dildorks. I have been Kate Sloan. You can find my sex blog at girlyjuice.net and the rest of my writing at katewritesaboutsex.com. You can also follow me on Twitter and Instagram at girly_juice. Where is your stuff?
I'm Bex. You can find all my writing at bextalksex.com, and I'm on Twitter and Instagram at bextalksex. Together with the Dildorks, you can find us at thedildorks.com or on Twitter and Instagram at thedildorks. You can also find us by searching the Dildorks in your favorite podcast app. While you're there, rate and review us. It brings us up in the charts, makes us easier for folks to find. If you want to help us out and support us in another way, you can go to patreon.com/thedildorks to toss a couple of bucks our way and help us keep being sex nerds on the internet.
We're also gathering questions right now for our hypotheticals episode, which is in late April. So we are looking for goofy sex, dating, and masturbating related hypothetical questions along the lines of, like, what sex toy would you want to have with you in a zombie apocalypse? Or if you had to eat one of your sex toys, which one would you like to eat? These are ones from past hypotheticals. So if you want to email us...
My favorite is still, would you want to have sex with one human-sized dick or 100 dick-sized humans.
The best. So good. I forget who sent us that one, but it's brilliant.
Kenton. It had to be Kenton.
Oh, yeah, probably. So we are collecting those. If you have ideas for questions along those lines, our email address is thedildorks@gmail.com. You could also probably DM either of us on Twitter. That's fine, too.
Yeah.
Thank you to Protodome. He did our theme song. Thank you to Amy. She did our logo. And thank you to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life. Bye. I was moisturizing my elbows because I'm an 80-year-old woman.
I was figuring out where to put pins on my leather jacket because I'm You're a 15-year-old boy.
Yeah.
Welcome to this podcast with an 80-year-old woman and a 14-year-old boy. I would listen to that show.
Oh, absolutely. That sounds incredible.
An 80-year-old? Oh, my God.
We should produce it. Yikes. I know so many 80-year-old women, too.
Me too, actually. Oh, God. Oh, God.
What if it's a different 80-year-old woman and 15-year-old boy every episode? Just talking about geopolitics.
I'm glad it's not a sex podcast anymore.
I mean, that's cool,
although,
too.
I would totally listen to a sex podcast that was teenagers and their grandparents talking about sex.
Yeah.
Like, how absolutely. Cool would that be? Right? To talk about, like, oh my God. Like,
I
how sex has changed over the years. And, like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Shit. let's just start recruiting old people and children.
Just what everybody wants the gays to do.
It's fine.
Okay, you want to start the thing?
Yes, because this is going down a path I'm not sure I can recover from.